Welcome to the Haney Biz Project with Mark Haney. Mark is a serial investorpreneur and the chief dreaming officer of the Haney Biz Companies. He's working tirelessly to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution and share the inspiring stories of the region's most influential leaders. Coming to you from the Marquee Media Studio, here's Mark Haney.
There are no great men. There are only great challenges that ordinary men are forced by circumstances to meet. That was said by Admiral William Halsey, and with it being the 4th of July weekend, with it being Independence Day, figured I would start off with a little quote, but it's true of entrepreneurship. This is the Haney Biz Project. We're on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in our hometown of Sacramento, and entrepreneurs face, I'd say, a life cycle that is similar, right? We all start off with this amazing dream. We want to change the world, and we tend to obsess on it. I think the most successful entrepreneurs find a way to kind of obsess on that. But then we all also run into what I call the trough of sorrow, right? All these obstacles along the way, and we have to overcome all these obstacles. And really, anything is possible if we overcome enough of those obstacles, but it is not easy. It is difficult. We get knocked down, and we have to figure out a way to get back up. And you know, when I hear the stories of entrepreneurship, when I hear the stories of people that have found a way to overcome, it inspires me. It's educational, and sometimes I see myself. We all, I think, see ourselves in those stories, and that's what the Haney Biz Project is all about. It is the stories of Sacramento's entrepreneurs, the success stories, and it's the stories of picking ourselves back up. The other day, and sometimes there's like a wake-up call that happened. And the other day I was driving down the road, zero dark 30, on my way to CrossFit, and didn't have my seatbelt on. And I was going down the back roads here into town, into Rockland, and a bird flew out and scared the heck out of me, and I almost swerved and almost crashed, actually. But it was kind of like my wake-up call. It was that sort of moment where I'm like, boy, I better wake up. And I think in entrepreneurship, we have those times, right, when, you know, we're going along, and then there's that breakthrough moment, that wake-up call. And I had that about 3 months ago as well, when I started talking to a woman named Monique Brown. Monique Brown is probably the most connected person in Sacramento entrepreneurship, in the Sacramento ecosystem. And guess what I decided to do? We were kind of cruising along here at Haney Biz 3 years into this show. And we said, you know what? If I want to take this show to the next level, if we want to take the Haney Biz Project to that next level, we need to begin to build the infrastructure, the people to help take us there. And guess what I did? I reached out to Monique Brown, and she is here with me today. Monique, welcome to the Haney Biz Project. Welcome to Haney Biz. For those of us that know you, we love you, but let's help Sacramento, the rest of Sacramento, fall in love with Monique Brown.
Awesome. Well, first of all, thank you. I'm so pumped up to be here. So pumped up to be part of the team. Day two. It's already been a great ride.
And you've already kicked Marcus off the show. It's usually Marcus here. Marcus, sorry, we have Monique Brown. No, that is, we were just kidding. Marcus is on assignment in Napa, right. Of all places. Funny, on a weekend, you know, on a holiday
day
weekend.
Before, yeah, day
yeah,
before.
He actually, I believe, is doing some work out there. He does not rest. But Monique, I want to help Sacramento get to know you better. Can you give us your background and how this applies to what we're doing here at Haney Biz?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So I moved to Sacramento maybe about 7 years ago and got involved with entrepreneurial ecosystem here, working with Jack Crawford at what was Velocity Ventures, now Impact. Great team, great work that he's doing over there, growing a fund to support entrepreneurs, certainly in the region and outside of the region. Moved over to do some work with Brandon Weber at IO Labs and the Urban Hive. And I'm super passionate about helping entrepreneurs succeed. I'm super passionate about helping people with a vision reach their goals.
Well,
so
yeah.
When you reached out, it was perfect timing, perfect fit. And we're so aligned in, you know, kind of our core values and what we're trying to achieve. I'm just super excited to
Well,
to be
I mean, we talk
you.
About igniting the entrepreneurial revolution on this show. show, right? It's always about, you know, if we think of these entrepreneurs out there that are chasing their dream as these little sparks, and if enough of these little sparks can catch fire and connect up, we can have an entrepreneurial revolution. We can change the way Sacramento operates as a community. We can get the whole town thinking entrepreneurially for our kids and our grandkids and for the future. But even today, Monique, you have to admit that things are starting to feel pretty good. The optimism seems to be on the rise. Would you agree?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I think people who have been working in this region for a really long time, you know, are continually saying now is our time, now is our moment. And there's just enough kind of grassroots activity that's starting to take hold, along with, you know, people who are championing the region outside the region, like the Barry Brooms of the world,
yes,
who are really, you know, kind of shouting it, you know, from the rooftops, you know. So I think there's a lot of the different ingredients in place. We've got you here committed,
yes,
to this mission.
Well,
so
it's kind of like I call it the power of with the Barry Brooms and the GSACs, with the venture capital community, with the entrepreneurs, right? Anything is possible. And I think, you know, if we can help highlight what's so great about entrepreneurship and maybe what it's not for everybody. So, but if we can highlight this, you know, we can get this thing off the ground.
Absolutely. Totally.
Yeah.
Agree.
Very
yeah.
cool. And at the end of the show today, we are going to have a little announcement. So I'm not going to give the news at this moment, but get you a little tease. That's called a tease, my friend. Get you to stick around to the end of the show for a little announcement. But you know what? It makes me think about gratitude as I look around here at Mark Tank. I'm thinking gratitude, right? I see we have all our sponsors. We have I'm grateful to you, Monique, for joining the team. But I also look at who's not here, and Marcus and Greg Van Dusen, our show producer. These guys are out today, but I am so appreciative of the Haney Biz team, the entire team, and we're making the best of this 4-day weekend and or whatever we want to call this. For me, it's always, you know, it's not even work. It's right. To me, this is just what I do. So anyway, thank you, and it just makes me think about my appreciation toward Marquee Media. My Marquee Media moment of the week happened at CrossFit yesterday. I'm at CrossFit, and somebody's phone's going off. I'm at CrossFit. And this girl comes up to me and she says, "Mark, I see you on the billboards all the time." And I'm like, "Yeah, I feel real proud of myself." Kind of a little embarrassed. And she says, "But I got to tell you, Mark, you know what? You look a lot buffer on the billboard. I don't know if that's Photoshop or what." I'm like, "Oh, thank you, Marquee Media. Thank you, Photoshop." But you know what? Coming up in the show, going to get you to stick around a little bit, because coming up in the show, we're going to have an inspirational speaker and the author of How to Network in College, Isaac Sarwanga. But we will also meet a man finding tomorrow's medicine today, Sunil Wadhwa, the founder and CEO of MedX Prime. But coming up after the break, we will meet the biology pioneer, Pam Marone, the founder and CEO of Marone Bio Innovations. Join the revolution at HaneyBiz.com. Brought to you courtesy of Stifel Financial. This is the Haney Biz Project.
Now back to Marquee Media Studio and the Haney Biz Project with your host, Mark Haney.
All right. Welcome back to the Haney Biz Project, brought to you courtesy of Comstocks Magazine and California Backyard. I am today joined by the biology pioneer, Pam Marone, the founder and CEO of Marone Bio Innovations. How are you doing, Pam?
Doing great. Glad to be here.
All right. Thank you for being here. And I look forward to sharing your story, because it's very uncommon. If you don't mind, Pam, let us know who you are and give us your your entrepreneurial journey. How did it start? Where are you today?
Oh, it started when I was 7 years old.
Whoa, really?
Yeah, I was a weird little girl. I wanted to be an entomologist, which is a person who studies bugs. I grew up on a beautiful 40 acres in southern Connecticut, and I watched the gypsy moth caterpillars eat the forest, and my father wanted to save a prized dogwood right outside the kitchen window, so he went to the store and he bought a toxic chemical, and he sprayed it to kill the caterpillars. Yeah, but he also killed the lady beetles, the lacewings, the honeybees, and my mother freaked out and told him that he would never use a chemical again, so he trotted back to the store and he found the first ever biological product for controlling caterpillars, still on the market today. It's a bacteria, which is a microorganism that gives the bug stomach aches. And I said, "Dad, so how'd it go?" And he goes, "Well, Makes your mother happy. It's good for the environment, but I don't know if it works. And that is the story of my career.
Well, I didn't even know, you know, I was thinking about being an entomologist too, but I didn't even know what it was till today. So, but I like science. I always liked the bugs as a little kid. So you started at seven and your imagination took you to where? Where are you today?
So I decided I was going to pursue a career in looking for ways to control pests without the use of toxic chemicals. So I pursued that my entire life. Went to school as an entomology major at Cornell University, PhD as an entomology major at North Carolina State University, then started my career at Monsanto Company, of all places. But they actually hired me to start up a new unit looking for new ways to control pests. And I did that for 7 years, and then I was recruited to Davis, California, by a Danish company, which I didn't even know, and I couldn't even pronounce the name, Novo Nordisk, but it is the biggest insulin provider. And they wanted me to set up a company in Davis, California, to look for new ways to control pests. And we called that Entotech, so that was my first startup. And then that was sold after 5 years to our largest competitor when they had some issues in their core businesses. And I started up AgriQuest. AgriQuest was a venture capital-backed company. I raised $60 million, almost got it public. But unfortunately, I filed for the offering right before 9/11 and couldn't get the offering done. I was just flying to the World Trade Center, and our lawyers for the deal were in the South Tower. They all did get out. I was flying September 12th. That never happened. And so the company was then, an investor did a kind of a hostile cram down, they call it, which wiped out my founder's stock. The company was sold a few years later to Bayer Crop Science for almost $500 million, and I didn't get anything from that sale. So that's a really tough lesson. But I said, hey, I'm a resilient entrepreneur. I'm going to start up again. And I started this company in 2006 and took it public in 2013. We've had our challenges, but we're doing really well and changing. We are changing the world. Developing products that are safer and effective, can control pests. And what I would say is we're just like pharmaceutical companies that have gone to the rainforest hunting for new drugs. And penicillin comes from a mold, and your antibiotics come from from microbes. And aspirin originally came from willow bark. We do the same thing, and we do go hunting in the rainforest, but many other places, like a rice field in Northern California. And we look for those bacteria and plants that we can then turn into products to control pests.
Okay, so who is your customer and what does this product actually look like?
So our customer is the farmer.
Okay.
And we sell through distributors who then sell to the farmer, and we spray it on a crop. So what it actually looks like, we try to make a product, and it's a natural product, so it could be an extract of a plant or it could be a bacteria, a living thing. But we try to make it so it's no different from a chemical pesticide, so it goes in a jug or a bag and the farmer sprays it out in his spray rig. Tractor sprayer, just like you would a chemical. So we're trying to make it so he doesn't have to change what he does. Sprays it out on the crop, and it increases the yields and quality of the crop while controlling the pests, and very biodegradable and doesn't harm anything.
Well, let's talk about taking companies public. You know finance. You know this world. For a lot of us, that's not something we really contemplate. We're just trying to put some food on the table. But you have this knowledge about how to take a company public. Why don't you break that down for us to educate us entrepreneurs?
It's actually a very rigorous process. So in order to go public in 2013, we started the process in 2011. And we had to map out all the milestones and steps along the way of how you're going to get there. And the investment bankers will tell you, well, you need this and that, and you have this milestone you have to meet, so we won't take you public until you do, you know, 1, 2, 3. So we ticked off those milestones. And then, you know, the Jobs Act was passed, and that is a law that made it easier for small companies to go public because you can file with the SEC for your offering confidentially.
Okay.
And so you can file, and then the SEC will give all this feedback about your offering while you're still, you know, still private. And then, you know, you can get your act together behind mm-hmm. the scenes before it was, you know, you'd have to do it publicly. So, and then you can do pre-market. You can do a roadshow with investors before you actually have to do the real thing. So it's a practice session. That made it really good. So we did in 2012, we did that practice session and got feedback from the investors about what they'd like to see. And we, you know, adapted and then did the real offering in August of 2013.
Well, I've heard from a number of people that there's a huge cost in and going public with Sarbanes-Oxley and the other, I don't know, regulatory requirements that unless you're a certain size company, it doesn't make sense to go public.
That's probably true. Looking back on it, you know, I don't know if I would do it again because we've had some big challenges with being a public company, and it is very expensive. It's several million dollars to comply, and even though you're small, you still have to follow all those rules,
right.
And your financials have to be perfect, which means you have to spend a lot of money on accountants and you have to spend a lot of money on lawyers. There's all kinds of laws. Sometimes you feel like you're going to straitjacket what you say. Is regulation, fair disclosure. You have to, if you say something, you know, material, something important about the company, you have to tell everybody. You can't tell one person that. Otherwise, you could actually end up in jail.
You've got a lot more concern and care. But there's a lot of reasons why not. What are the benefits of going public versus just raising venture capital?
Yeah, one of the reasons why we actually decided to go public was because it is easier to raise money.
Okay.
Actually, you know, you can do an overnight offering, literally. I mean, you can do a roadshow, and a few days later, you can close on $10 million. So that's a lot easier than private. Number two, we're the first company of our type. We call them ourselves ag biologicals or biopesticide company. We're the first one on the public market, so we've created a new category. That attention and that has really had other entrepreneurs want to do the same thing and see they can do it and also go public. So we were the first of a trend. And also we have a lot of more partners and other. It was a lot of benefits. There's been a lot of downsides and a lot of benefits. It's not the glorious. You know, a lot of entrepreneurs think it's the dream. The capstone of their career to go public. I would say no.
It was our dream back in my video store days. We took a bank public actually back in the day, and I've been around it a few times, and it's been extremely lucrative, but you know, I've also heard the pitfalls. So what's the biggest pitfall that you've read, and the biggest challenge? Maybe it's because you're public. Maybe it's just because the operations of the business. What's been the biggest challenge over this last several years?
Well, we had an employee who did some bad things, and he was actually arrested and charged with fraud in 2016.
Oh, wow.
And that cost us $17 million and really hobbled the company because it opened up a big SEC investigation and restatement of our financials, and that's a very bad thing. And so
that hurt the stock price, I have to assume.
Oh, yeah, the stock price tanked.
Did you have to go out for more money?
Oh, yeah. But the problem is because of Dodd-Frank law, you can only raise one-third of your public float, and when your stock price is low, that means you can raise less money. So then there's all these trolls around and all these predator funds.
People are like, can we pick them up at the bottom, right? Yeah.
Yeah, so wow. But we got through it. We downsized the company by almost 50%, and we got through it because we had a hearty group of survivor employees who chose to stay with us. We redid our vision and mission statement, and we said, you know, we're going to make it through these challenges. We're going to be better than ever, and we are better than ever now, and we're doing really well since that time.
Well, we heard that you recently got included in the Russell 2000. What kind of difference did that make?
A lot of shares traded, so that gives us a lot more float. So what happens is when you're a small company, if you don't have enough public float, you're subject to a lot of short sellers and stock manipulation. So it's good to have more float of your stock.
Float?
Float, it would be basically the number of shares that are out there trading.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, so if you have too little float, then you get these people coming in, and you can, and these small stocks are so volatile, they can go up and down, and they're very subject to manipulation. So it's better to have more float out there.
Okay, so you battled, you persevered, but you have, you're more than just the leader of this bioscience company, right? You are somebody, you are a woman in a man's world, and you were telling me earlier, your husband's actually a man in a woman's world. Talk to us about how that works.
Well, I think opposites attract. I met my husband when I was 17 at Cornell, and we got married the week before graduation, and we celebrated our 40th wedding anniversary in May of this year.
Congrats.
And the nice thing about being married to a social worker is he could move around for me, so he followed me everywhere I went because you could, a male social worker in a female field, he was instantly hired anywhere because he became very good at doing it. counseling children and especially young boys. So,
well, we only have a minute left. Words of advice to a woman who's thinking, hey, I'm going to go for it. Pam Marone has done this. I can do this too. Any advice as somebody who's super ambitious out there listening?
Well, you know, it used to be that you had to go spend a lot of years in business before you started a company. But what I'm seeing right now, because of the amount of investment going into agriculture and ag tech, you can, if you're female, you can just do it. Yeah. And even if you're just right out of graduate school or school, there's so many problems to solve. We are going from 8 billion, you know, we're going from 6 billion people to 10 billion people by 2050. And there, we have to do it more sustainably in how we grow our food. So there's many, many problems for entrepreneurs to solve in food production.
So many problems to solve. Get out there and just do it. Coming up after the break, by the way, I want to thank you, Pam, for coming on. Coming up after the break, we will meet a man finding tomorrow's medicine today, Sunil Wadhwa, the founder and CEO of MedX Prime. Join the revolution at HaneyBiz.com, courtesy of Audi Rockland and DCA Capital. This is the Haney Biz Project.
Welcome back to the Marquee Media Studio with Mark Haney, igniting the entrepreneurial revolution with the Haney Biz Project.
Welcome back to the Haney Biz Project, brought to you courtesy of Hub International and Legion AVS. I'm Mark Haney, and I am joined by a man finding tomorrow's medicine today, Sunil Wadhwa, the founder and CEO of MedX Prime. How you doing, Sunil?
I'm doing great, man. Thank you for having me.
I appreciate you being here, coming down to Haney Biz, coming down to Mark Tank inside Marquee Media Studios. Talk to us about your business and your entrepreneurial journey.
It's been a tough one, man.
Okay.
We're talking about, you know, I heard a lot about entrepreneurial stuff today.
Yeah.
It's a tough road.
Yes,
it's a tough road. But we're really excited about what we're doing, Mark. We're on a mission. This is a national awareness around adverse drug reactions.
Okay.
Unfortunately, in America, 4 billion prescriptions are written. That's with a B. Boy.
Wow.
What's the population of the U.S., Mark?
Yeah. 300 million?
I don't know. 330.
330? All right.
So
people are taking a lot of drugs,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
But unfortunately, adverse drug reactions is now the fourth leading cause of death. The fourth. We're not talking about 400. We're talking about the fourth leading cause of death, man. Scary stuff. Somebody takes a medication or a combination of medications, they end up in the hospital or unfortunately dead. 125,000 people will die every year in this country. And let me give you a visual on that, Mark. It's comparable to an airplane going down every single day with 350 passengers for the next 1 year. Okay?
Makes the news, right? Well, we never hear about it, but you have something that's solving that. What are you doing to solve that tremendous problem?
So a very simple test, Mark, has been in the market for 14 years, believe it or not, and nobody knows about it, including the medical community. Now, very fortunately, there are some great clinics like the Mayo, Vanderbilt, Stanford. In fact, St. Jude's just announced that they're going to use this test on every patient. So I'm very, very pleased to see that. But when I started the company about 5 years ago, we struggled, man. I mean, talking to doctors, nobody wanted to incorporate the test.
Okay.
It was the weirdest thing. It's still baffling. Even today, 5 years later, if I go out and talk to 100 doctors today, I'll be lucky if one or two maybe know about it.
Why do they not want to promote the test? Is it they can't get paid on it?
You know, that's been... exactly, right?
I always try to follow the money.
You know, that's been the million-dollar question, yeah, right? Why would doctors not want to do a two-minute simple test so that they can provide the right medication, the right dosage, right from the beginning, right? Makes nothing but sense. Well, an article just came out, man, in NPR just 5 days ago. And this is something that our team has known for a long time, but it's now in this article. And the fact that was shared in this article is that since 2013 to the present, that's about 5 years, the pharmaceutical companies have paid out $9 billion to 900,000 doctors.
Ah, the trial lawyers came in and, right? Is that what happened?
Need I say any more?
I mean,
all right. So it's been an uphill battle, man. It's been an uphill battle, but I have absolutely no idea why every doctor in this country is not using this technology. In fact, they will. In the next year or two, it'll become standard practice, in our opinion.
Okay.
In fact, the New Yorker magazine just came out with a cartoon, funny cartoon. There's a guy in a bathroom ready to pop some meds. And the caption at the bottom says, hey, wait a minute, if I have an adverse drug reaction, do I call my doctor or my lawyer? All right. So the legal system is catching up is the point I'm making. And so just as we get a blood test, just as we get a urine test so that doctors know what's going on inside our body, doctors have to do this test. It's really that simple.
So what stage is the company in now? What's this get into the entrepreneurial journey? Are you in the first inning? Or are you toward the end?
You know, 5 years ago, we were definitely, in the first inning. Okay. We believe we're inching closer now to, I'd say, sixth, seventh inning.
Oh,
right?
Nice. Yeah. Okay.
Like I said, I think this will become standard care. You'll go into the doctor, you know, a year or two from now, and they're going to say, hey, Mark, we've had your blood done. We've had your urine done. You're on three meds or two meds. Hopefully, you're never on any meds. Yeah. But
I'm on CrossFit. That's my medicine.
Well, there you go, man. Exactly right. Okay. But the numbers prove themselves, unfortunately, right?
So was there a breakthrough moment, right? Nobody goes through life undefeated. We go through this trough of sorrow, as I like to call it. And then did something, did you have a wake-up call of some sort?
Well, I almost lost my wife 10 years ago due to an adverse drug reaction. And I'm coming back from New York 5 years ago, sitting in the airplane, bored, started flipping through magazines and found an article on this particular test. And as I read the article, I became really angry because I reflected on what happened to my wife. And my father also went through an open heart surgery. All right. Now, they cut him open. They gave him tons of medications afterwards, of course. And the poor man had nothing but reactions. Okay. Off to the doctors, they change out this med, change out that med, off to the pharmacy. And this nonsense went on for about a year before they finally figured out the right cocktail. Now, I'm reading this article thinking, why in the world didn't my father's doctor, before cutting him open in half, give this two-minute test that would have clearly shown the doc what meds my dad can handle and what meds my dad cannot handle? It's really that simple, okay? So that's how I got involved with this. I found the number one lab in the country that does the analysis on this test. We've created a brilliant model where we've got representatives that can join our company around the country become entrepreneurs with our company on a part-time, full-time basis, and help us spread this very, very important message.
So you're promoting the entrepreneurial revolution alongside B.
Absolutely.
This is great. Okay, so, and then they go in and help market this product to the doctor, is that right? Who's the customer?
Yeah, two ways. We're educating the general population. Mm-hmm. We've created a brilliant one-page letter that they can take to their doctor that clearly explains to the doctor why they should have this test done, okay? And equally, we're also going into the doctor's offices and hospitals and such to I hate to say the word educate docs, but we are. Man, nobody knows about it.
Is it a blood test? Is it some sort of, go ahead.
It's a Q-tip. It's a Q-tip in your mouth, all right? You're going to, 2 minutes, Q-tip, both sides of your mouth, goes into our lab. Lab sends back a report to your doctor, says, based on Mark, your body's different than mine, obviously, right? But if you and I go into the doctor, they're going to give you and I the same med. Doesn't make any sense.
Okay.
So the doctor's going to get this report back, and it's going to say, hey, based on Mark's genetic makeup and your metabolism, Mark can only have these medications, but never give him these medications.
Gotcha.
Okay? Very clear, concise, to the point report. Very simple. So again, the doctor can give you now the right med, the right dosage, right from the beginning.
And so the cost for the consumer, if they're not covered by insurance, is there a cost
for
that?
Great question. Yeah. So Medicare is picking up the tab on this.
Cool.
All right? Of course, the doctor has to send in some information on the patient. No big deal. A lot of insurance companies. Now, when we started the company 5 years ago, hardly any insurance companies were picking this thing up. Yeah. We're seeing more and more insurance companies now covering
great.
This thing. So we're very excited about that.
Exciting stuff. Yeah. So we only have a minute left. Advice to, so you've had this battle, right? You've built this company. It's on the grow. Sixth inning. Any advice to people who are in the first inning, first or second inning?
Man, if you believe, stay focused. You know, successful people, I know we've all heard this adage, but it's very important. Successful people do what unsuccessful people are unwilling to do. I saw the vision with the test. I think it's going to be absolutely standard care in this, not only in this country, but worldwide. Everyone in the country and the world is on meds, unfortunately.
Yeah.
We more so than other countries here in the U.S., but it just makes a lot of sense, man. Why would you want to play Russian roulette with your life without this test?
Yeah, very cool. I loved hearing the story. Sunil, thanks for joining us on the show. You got to believe and you got to stay focused. Some pillars of success, probably no matter what you're doing. When we return, I will be joined by the inspirational speaker and the author of How to Network in College, Isaac Sirwanga. Join the revolution at HaneyBiz.com, courtesy of Chicago Fire Pizza and Apex Appraisal Services. This is the Haney Biz Project.
back to the Haney Biz Project with investorpreneur Mark Haney, coming to you from the Marquee Media Studio.
Welcome back to the Haney Biz Project, brought to you courtesy of DSA Technologies and California Growth Advisors. I'm Mark Haney, and today I have the privilege of being joined by the inspirational speaker and the author of How to Network in College. Isaac Serwanga is in the house. How you doing, Isaac?
I'm doing well. It's funny. Usually if I'm getting ready to present, I have to be the most energetic guy.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know if I'm winning here. It's going
right.
to be hard to
well,
beat it.
Well, you may have met your match. Now, you are the most motivated guy. I am just like I'm kind of like the assistant motivational guy today because that's what you do for a living.
Yes, sir.
Tell us what you do. Tell us who you are and what you do.
First and foremost, my name is Isaac Serwanga. Inform and Inspire on my t-shirt. It's kind of what I believe, the two words that I live by. But before I begin, absolute gratitude to be on this show and absolute honor to be here. And it's funny because you kind of pushed that entrepreneurial spirit throughout Sacramento, and I wanted to give the credo. There's the credo, the entrepreneurship credo. And it goes, I choose not to be a common man. It is my right to be uncommon if I can. I seek opportunity and not certainty, right? I'm missing the words here. Hold on, wait, they're coming back. I'm gonna start over. Ready? I choose not to be a common man. It is my right to be uncommon if I can. I seek opportunity and not security. I do not wish to be a kept citizen made humbled and dulled by having the state look after me. I want to take the calculated risk to dream and to build, to risk and to...
I'm going to jump in.
This is live.
But it doesn't matter, though. Yeah. That's it. That's what entrepreneurship is.
Oh,
we go
goodness.
Out there and, you know, we give it a shot. We laugh at ourselves.
Can we continue and I'll do it at the end?
Whatever, man.
All right, let's go.
This is what entrepreneurship is.
Yeah.
We go out there every week on the show. I mess up my words and it's like, it's fun. We laugh at me. After the show, we always laugh at me.
I like
and,
it.
And so, you know, having a... you know, something memorized or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, I mess up stuff all the time. However, it's inspirational. And I want to know, in your mind, how do we get the entrepreneurial message out to, you know, this hope, information, this inspiring stuff? How do we deliver it?
You know what? I one of the things that I try to do when I present, whether it's to young people or to, you know, people of an organization, is try to bring that mission statement. Usually we know our mission statement, but we don't live it. We don't sing it. We don't express it, right? So how do you bring emotion to something that you really care about so that people can, you know, you're someone who believes what you believe. You can tell through not just your words.
I have my mission tattooed
my
to my
goodness.
Soul.
Right. That's it. So how can we bring that to each and every person? I think the reason why I use these two words, inform and inspire, is the information comes from outside, right? Everybody needs information, but at the end of the day, it's the inspiration that makes you act, right? So how do you take in the information and then use that inspiration to make that first step?
So you and I know each other through Billy Downing.
Yes.
He is helping young people to navigate their way to college.
100%.
What do you do with Billy? And you do stuff like help him navigate in college, am I right?
100%. So one of the things that we're doing right now is I work with first-year undergraduates in college. And the reason why I do that, in 2016, wrote a book, How to Network in College, and it actually came from my own failures, right?
I never read that book.
Oh,
I
man.
Probably should have. Ooh.
So graduated from Princeton University in 2013,
wow.
And when I graduated unemployed. And I thought to myself, man, if you're going to graduate from the top academic institution in the country.
How does that happen?
How does that happen, right? And it took a lot of reflection and reverse engineering what college really is. And to me, I believe it's a social ecosystem where people can definitely meet and engage and learn about themselves and become self-aware. And it was one of those things where through that failure, through that, oh my goodness, what's happening next, that this book came about. So it's kind of been my mission statement and my push ever since.
Yeah. So discoveries made, right? You had this time when you got out of college and it was a sort of a wake-up call.
Right.
What discoveries have you made in this last several years? Because you're only, what, in your mid-20s?
Yes.
How old are you?
Yeah, 28. Yeah.
Graduate
28,
from Princeton.
Yeah.
You're an athlete, am
yes.
I right?
Yeah, yeah.
You're an excellent athlete, and now you are helping the next guy in line.
Right.
Talk to us about what you've learned in this journey.
You know, one thing that I think is I've stuck to is this phrase, hold to the vision, right? Of creating a vision for yourself that you want to stick to and going through the trials and the obstacles and just making sure you hold to it. Because a lot of us, you see the first failure and you think, oh my goodness, I can't do this thing, right? You see the first, man, it's going to look like this. And then you hit that first wall and you say, man, it's time to give up. But that's just the time to start.
Yeah.
So it's kind of generic, but it's been something.
Why do you think people give up?
That's a great question. I think you always want to see.
A lot of people give up on their dreams. I think there are a lot of people, a lot of average people out there who at one point, they had these enormous dreams,
right.
But then they just decide to settle into the 8-to-5.
It's not easy.
What happened?
I think one of the things that happens is you want to see the result right there.
And it
takes so much more time than
immediate
that.
Immediate gratification is how they call it.
Absolutely.
My wife tells me I have that sometimes. Yeah. Impatience, stuff like that.
Right. So delay the gratification a little bit and understand it's going to be difficult, but just kind of sticking to that vision.
Yeah. So you're a public speaker, you're a writer, you've got all this stuff going. So I'm doing a little public speaking these days too.
Sure.
But you know, I'm not a professional. So you are a professional. Walk me through, like, how do you prep for a motivational talk? How do you prep for doing something that's going to change people's lives?
You know, one of the things that usually helps me with preparing is understanding who I'm talking to. Is one of the first steps that I've learned along the way from speaking to elementary school students and now speaking at corporate events. I'm understanding that there's a tone to an audience. There's a feel to an audience. So kind of getting a background, you know, doing your homework and understanding what it is that they want to hear. And sometimes it could be as simple as before you go out is what is it that you think you would like to hear?
So you're saying that at the beginning of your talk or before you even walk out on stage?
Oh, way before.
Okay.
Way before.
So send them an email or make a phone call to gauge the audience.
Absolutely.
Okay. So now in prepping, do you ever get butterflies? Do you ever get nervous?
All the time. I messed up in the first minute here.
That wasn't butterflies.
Butterflies happen all the time. And it's funny with public speaking because many people think because you speak professionally or because you speak, that means you don't get butterflies when in truth, I get butterflies all the time, which is why I do it.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Tell me about that. You want to walk into the fire.
You know, it feels like, you know, I was a 3-sport athlete in high school as well as college. And speaking is the closest thing that gets you to that feeling of competing.
Like kickoff time, right?
Oh,
you went back. What position did you play in football?
I was wide receiver.
Wide receiver. Yeah. So we ever like do returns for punts or kickoffs and stuff?
Yeah.
Like, and you're back there and you have to catch, especially in a punt, to catch the ball and you're just sitting back there alone.
100%.
I mean, that's how public speaking is. You're sitting there, the ball's coming down, you're like, do not drop.
Pressure is all on you. And then when you drop it, sometimes you will.
How do you
respond?
No doubt. Yeah. You got to get back in if you got to go play. If you turn it over, you got to play defense,
right? Right. 100%.
I love it. Okay. So sharing our thoughts with these people in college. We have listeners that are thinking about chasing an entrepreneurial dream. Just give us some wisdom here that is young people. Young people are our future, and you know, sometimes millennials get kind of classified and maybe a light that's not as positive. I have millennials all throughout my life. It's what keeps me young.
Right.
Give us some advice on how we as millennials or as people dealing with millennials need to affect, what do we have to do to win?
You know what? One of the things that I have learned, and you know, I consider myself a student along the journey, is being practical but keeping the dream at the same time, which means that you can still hold to that vision, but understand that the day-to-day of what you have to do to get done. I think the quote is, you know, sometimes you have to do what you have to do in order to eventually do what you'd like to do. So for millennials, sometimes we get classified in that area where it's just that dream state, but sometimes you got to keep the dream and the practical together.
If you do enough of the little things, anything is possible,
eventually,
right? Yeah,
eventually.
That's my yes if dot, dot, dot. You look
nothing
around.
Nothing is impossible.
Nothing
I love that song.
If we continue to battle on all the little things. And okay, we only have about 30, 40 seconds left.
Yeah.
Give me a word to describe Billy Downing, right? He's a mutual friend of ours.
Yeah.
Give me a word to describe our buddy Billy Downing.
Billy Downing is an incredible communicator and definitely can connect connect with almost anyone.
Yeah.
He's someone who, you know, I'm here because of him, and he's one of those individuals who has a knack for being able to identify how to help someone. And I think that's where we connected. Yeah. He saw that I do the same thing, and, you know, we're a great team because of that.
Isaac Sirwanga, we met through Billy Downing. Both of you are helping so many young people, so many of those college-age people, to navigate these crazy waters of growing up and,
yes, sir,
and achievement. Thank you very much for coming on the show, Isaac.
Mark, I appreciate it.
You bet. Next week, we got Kim Silver, Silver's HR, Sue Ann Vandermeerden. Vandermeerden, I'm not even pronouncing that right. We have to cut that. She's got an entrepreneurial story of a law corporation. You're not going to want to miss it. When we return, we will share our takeaways, closing thoughts about how to win in life and how to overcome these obstacles, these barriers that are always in front of us. This is the Haney Biz Project.
Welcome back to the Marquee Media Studio for Mark's takeaways from today's Haney Biz Project.
Welcome back to the Haney Biz Project. You know, today was a wake-up call. Heard a lot of good information, and we were able to bring on my good friend Monique Brown to our team and to share stories from her recent entrepreneurial past and how she's going to help the Haney Biz team. But we also heard some incredible stories about entrepreneurship and perseverance. And I think maybe the first time ever we had somebody that actually took their company public right here out of Sacramento and shared her story. Pam Marone, incredible story. But I mean, I think it's these stories, right? It's the stories of winning that inspire us. And in every one of these stories, there's this rocky road, and we have to find a way to pick ourselves back up. Nobody goes through life undefeated. And the most successful entrepreneurs, they figure out a way to muster up the strength to get back up and keep battling. And, you know, I think, you know, as they think about like what makes entrepreneurs successful, right, is hearing all these stories, I listen for these commonalities and these common threads, and you know, I think about like all the different problems that face us as entrepreneurs, and then how do you overcome these barriers, right? I think the best way is to be banging, right? I always ask the question, are you hanging or are you banging? And when you're banging, you're at your very best, at your very best opportunity. And when you're hanging, like maybe Marcus is in the wine country, I don't really know what he's doing, but you know, that's good. We need our recharge time. We need to be relaxing at times because it gives us that strength to get up the next day and go fight. But you know what? What do I hear? What do I see? What do I feel? I feel like people, a lot of times, they don't, the three main things that we run into is we don't have a sustainable passion, right? We talked to Marone today, or Pam Marone, and you know, she developed her love for humanity as a seven-year-old and trying to save the world, beginning with things that she dreamt about as a young child, and finding something that we can stick with, I think, is the most important thing. And a sustainable passion is what I call it. And then the other thing that I think keeps us from being successful in life so many times is our misallocation of resources, right? We make decisions about what we do with our team, what we do with our money, what we do with our resources, and we allocate them in the wrong ways. And so many times, those decisions, they can cripple us or really slow down our opportunities. But when we have those breakthrough moments, when you know you are onto something and you start going for it and you're in a rhythm and you're firing on all cylinders, when you're really banging, right, great things happen. And that starts many times with that wake-up call, with that epiphany. And for me, I think my epiphany beyond bringing on Monique Brown was really the third barrier to banging. Is I think we don't attend to our purpose in life, the things that are most important to me. And so as I look around Mark Tank, we talked about our tattoo on my soul for my mission statement. It's my family, it's my friends, and my community. And if you look inside Mark Tank, if any of our listeners ever want to come down to Rockland and hang out with good old Marky from down on the block, bounce some entrepreneurial ideas off one another, you'll see in my office the things that drive me, the why, the purpose in my life. And I it's my family. And, you know, I have Haneyville. I have my Haneyville plans, the blueprints for the future of our family and our family compound, and the pictures of my kids, and you know, those are the things, that's my why. And my friends, my business partners, right? I have this sign that I'm holding in my hand. It says Wall Street on it. And it reminds me of my business partner and my security company. And, you know, he said on the sign, "Mark, thanks for investing in me." And he gave that to me a number of years ago, but it drives me. It makes me decide every day to carry on, because it's hard and we need that why, right? When at CrossFit, we often say, embrace the suck, right? So it sucks sometimes, or it's hard, but you got to battle through it, walk into that fire. Even if you're nervous about public speaking, that's what we do. We battle it. And, you know, my family, my friends, and my community, my hometown of Sacramento. And we're missing Greg Van Dusen today. We're missing Marcus Haney today, guys that have fought for our freedom. If you look at the flags around me, I have a flag here that a kid I coach brought me back from Afghanistan. But that flag has red stripes. And those red stripes came from the blood of men that fought for our freedom, like Greg, like Marcus. So just a little a shout out here on 4th of July weekend to everybody who's fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life, to the 13 stripes, to the 50 stars, and to that one wake-up call that's right around the corner for all of us. Never above you, never below you, always by your side.